Welcome to Waifimo.com, the podcast hosted by me, Roger Lopez Bennett, a born dreamer. In this podcast, we feature young entrepreneurs who have founded their first startup before 30. Why? Well, because under 30 founders are rare and sometimes not taken seriously, but their stories are even more interesting than the rest. And before starting this episode, let me remind you that extra information about the speakers can be found on waifimo.com/podcast. Enjoy!
So first, you before mentioned just a bit that it's upon kind of marketers to tell customers what's happening with the data, what kind of information the company keeps. Do you think the marketers should do it with ads, or do you think they should do it some other way once the customers have downloaded the application? Because I just refer to Apple real quick. Usually most of their ads recently have been, "You're secure with us." All they've been highlighting is their privacy, their, you know, face ID and how secure everything is and so on. It kind of gives you a comfort, but also it's not that everywhere you go around iOS, you see security everywhere, right? So where do you think most marketers should highlight that part?
I think this goes back to everything we've been saying. It's about using the tools you have. And I mentioned conversations, and this is a good reason to have a conversation to say to someone, "Yerk, you know, we take this seriously. You know, we've invested in X and Y, and we are 100% secure, or we've got some accreditation that demonstrates that." So I think, again, that's another message that marketers can use as part of their, whether you weave it into your campaign as part of the messaging, or whether you do a standalone campaign. I think, you know, I think that depends on that. The number of customers you're losing sight of through the cookie acceptance. Big is the problem? And I think you'll find that organizations will, the ones that have gone, been very strict, you know, and maybe struggling in terms of the visibility of customers, will look to legal and legislation and to see, well, how can we make it easier and make it maybe more fair for the company to actually be able to have some visibility and be able to do our jobs, because ultimately they're having one arm tied behind their back, not being able to see what's going on.
Makes sense. Yeah, makes sense, definitely. And also, so my other question would be, do you think this new kind of batch of entrepreneurs, either the young entrepreneurs or like these new companies being founded recently, are going to be heavily focused on data, security and privacy? Like, we can look, for example, at apps like messaging apps like either Telegram or Signal, that they do keep very minimal data on you. But then something like WhatsApp that recently wanted to share, you know, information with Facebook, kind of triggered a lot of people and left the platform and moved on to either Telegram or Signal. Do you think that's like the next wave of entrepreneurs heavily focusing on security and privacy?
Well, I think they have to. I don't think that it will be done by choice and it's a nice to have. You have to. That has to be in the DNA of your organization and what you stand for. That's what people are looking for, right? So I think the fact, if you're saying we're not holding any data, we don't feel we need that, then okay, great. Yeah. That's probably giving maybe some comfort to some prospects, and others maybe going, well, how's it work? What's your business model? Mm-hmm. So I think for me, it's very much about you'd be doing this before even you start your marketing activities to understand how you're managing the data. Because think about it, you're building foundations. If you don't have those foundations, then you could get yourself in a real mess. And I think entrepreneurs out starting out need to spend the time to actually get that right. Because if they don't, they'll be exposed and potentially be in a quite serious situation as they move further on and grow their organization.
Definitely. We see that now in 2020, 2021.
2021.
Yeah. Fingers crossed. So, you know, speaking of Telegram now, you know, they announced a couple of weeks ago that they are launching the ad platform. So they're going to start making money out of it. And so do you think it's good to be one of the first adapters and placing ads on that platform? Or, you know, should organizations wait a little bit?
I think it depends on their targeting capability and what data they have, what knowledge they have on their customers. Because if your customer is there, your prospect is there, then why not? But you need to do due diligence. So what other advertisers are advertising on there from other industries? You know, it might be conflicting if there's alcohol or industries that are not favouring or not really going to do anything for your brand. So I think there's qualifying questions you have to ask. There's no reason why you can't go first, but you should absolutely be scrutinising what level of data they've got, what insight they've got, what security they've got, and how they manage advertising. But I go through my career and I always like to be first. Because it creates a story. Yeah. It's a PR story. It also then helps to build a culture in your organization of being first. And you know, they're like, God, we're never first to anything. Well, actually, this time we are. And so it starts to change the mood. People start to believe, well, actually, yeah, we can do things and be innovative or be first. And I think that sends a great statement to the industry and organization. But it has to be managed. You have to know clearly what you're getting into and what the risks are. And if you don't know what the risks are, then don't do it, because that could come and bite you quite hard.
You know, talking about the podcast, have you placed any advertisements or you've been in the backstage?
I've worked with lots of media companies who, you know, in terms of digital advertising. So whether it's on display advertising, whether it's app marketing, or social media marketing. So I've worked with organizations and their associated media companies to deliver some great campaigns and maybe not some great campaigns.
Yeah. That always. So, you know, now would you consider placing ads on podcasts? And, you know, how does differentiate from, you know, YouTube content, like, you know, videos on YouTube or whatever, or TV, even TV.
It's quite interesting because, I mean, I've not been advertising on podcasts, actually. And I think it's a real opportunity. And the reason I say that is because I always feel that the few podcasts that I've listened to, you're very engaged, you're very interested in the subject matter. You know, it might be a passion of yours. So therefore, if the advertising is highly relevant and complementary to the podcast, then it could be a really, really good vehicle to drive awareness and consideration, mm-hmm. for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would ask, so do you think that probably on podcasts, the ads might be, and I'm pretty sure there's data that might confirm or discard this, but I was just thinking off the top of my head, when you're listening to a podcast, it's all kind of audio, right? You're driving, you're walking down the street, you're commuting. Mm-hmm. And if an ad starts playing or the podcast host is talking to you about the product, it might seem like a seamless transition to it. So kind of you don't mind much and you might be like, oh, that might sound cool. Whereas I feel like in YouTube, possibly because the visuals just pop and now all you have is an ad, either triggers a good response on your brain or either you're like, oh my God, why did this happen right now when it didn't have to, you know?
Well, YouTube will be quite intrusive, right? You've been told you have to look at this ad before you consume the content that you want to view. Sure. I like the idea of editorial, and I suppose whether it's the host talking about products and clearly he's getting commercial value out of it, which again needs to be transparent. That's quite a nice way because he's built the trust of his audience. They probably, you know, have a lot of respect for them and they probably have fairly loyal and regular listeners. So I think that's a really nice vehicle, not being intrusive, but also better airtime to be talking about the product and in its best possible light rather than some 5-second ad, which might be, you know, quite intrusive or just not at the same, what's the word I'm looking for? It just disrupts the theme of the podcast and they've got to be careful, right? Because the podcast has got to get as many listeners and keep as many listeners as possible
as well
to make it commercially viable for advertisers.
Yeah. Also following a bit with podcasts too, you know, we have, you know, forms of content, articles, podcasts, you know, videos. What's the most effective form of content for SEO? What helps SEO the most, you think?
Well, I mean, podcasts are obviously content I think blog content is really important.
Okay.
And again, with lots of relevant information, and it's not necessarily about the products I'm talking about here, but maybe the lifestyle, the experience that this product or service gives you. So, for instance, I did quite a lot of work with a car rental company, and we did a lot around cities around around Europe, and Barcelona actually, as a destination. And that proved hugely successful in terms of rankings in SEO for all terms around Barcelona and car rental and experiences. And we saw significant uplift in sales because of it. So it definitely does work. And I think the podcast would also add to that. I don't think it's just one channel you have to think about here for SEO. It's actually a whole range of channels. The touch points the customers have experienced and utilize, which obviously Google can see through their algorithms and what's going on with your website.
Yeah. And so do you think short or long content is better?
I think short, and I only say that in the sense of people's attention spans. In terms of people reading things now. You know, people. When's the last time you read a newspaper from front to back?
Never.
That's right. You take snippets of content, right? So you take sentiment. You get to take sound bites, and if you're really interested, of course you will research that. And let's take the funnel again. And depending on where your funnel, the funnel you are in the funnel, will depend on how much content you'll consume and how interested you are in as I say that product or service. So it's I think short form will get the interest, and long form will be equally as important as they get deeper into the funnel and deeper into the brand.
Makes total sense.
Yeah. And so, you know, what would you say the main differences are between large firms and startups when it comes to brand management? You know, startups have to build it from scratch. And then, so is that easier or harder to manage? What do you think?
Well, I think it's easier to manage now for startups because, you haven't got necessarily the legacy. You might be a pure play, where larger brands now are struggling, right? Because they're still talking about themselves. They're still talking about the product. Yeah. Where startups now are talking about the lifestyle and the problems and the issues that they're solving that customers are facing every day. It's a totally different skill sets, totally different attitude. And they can reach people with digital channels that the other companies are still relying on maybe traditional media to find and nurture these customers. So from my perspective, I think that you see marketplaces as a classic. It's really starting to hurt large organizations now because of their reach and their scale and the fact that they're able to bring on so many other smaller cottage industries, entrepreneurs on a platform that really propels them. So when you say you're doing it on your own, well, actually, okay, but you've got marketplaces that might equally give you that lift that you didn't think you'd be able to get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's very true because I feel also like, as Andy mentioned, the big companies just focus on themselves a lot, trying, you know, to highlight their legacy always or what they've done before and their track record. Whereas a startup can have a, let's say, deeper emotional connection with the customers.
Absolutely. You know, and more really personal, create a story. One-to-one. Yeah. They understand the technology. Mm-hmm. They are focused on where they got to go.
Yeah.
They're not necessarily fixing stuff. Where large organizations are probably fixing things.
Fixing, yeah.
Lots of people, in large numbers of people in a quite a complex matrix organization, typically. And it becomes difficult. It becomes very difficult. It just becomes very complicated, overcomplicated, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, so what's the toughest moment in your career and how did you overcome it?
Oh, toughest moment of my career. That's an interesting one. I think one of the tough ones was I was working in a partnership with Sony, Sony Ericsson. So doing the mobile phones, and I was working with a broadcaster at the time, and working with the Premier League, and we went live with an ad to they the phone company were using the ad, using our content, and it was all, we thought it was all approved, and it went out, and it wasn't. And actually, the player and the club that were involved saw it and had to and complain, and we had to pull it. And it was, and the, it was several millions worth of advertising spend that went into it, and it got pulled. So it's a very embarrassing, frustrating situation, if I'm honest, because I don't think that we were necessarily as prepared to work with third parties in the same way that we did just working, you know, on our own brand. So that was really difficult, because then when we did go out to the ad with new creative, it just looked awful. It was just terrible. And it was just, yeah, moment had gone. How do we get around it? Well, I think it was just being honest and transparent again, as I've always said, and just learn from it. Okay, but just make sure that everybody who is needs to know about, you know, who's involved in your activity or who it's going to impact is aware and they've approved it, because otherwise it could be a lot of money and time wasted that you could be doing better things.
Yeah, nobody wants to see that happening. It's
nope.
Doesn't sound like the ideal situation.
No, it's not at all.
Real quick, very, very, very quick, Andy. Do you think with these new technologies, kind of like, you know, project management tools like Asana or et cetera, it's become easier to know who's involved in a project and make the cross communication much simpler and avoid most mistakes?
Yeah, I think it helps. I think it definitely helps. Of course, it all depends on the user and the input of the content and the frequency and the communication. But it absolutely helps. Absolutely helps. I think it's really important because it can be quite complex, and you've seen and heard of all these channels that we have to our disposal. It's not easy, because that brings in maybe lots of different agencies, lots of different teams, lots of different people from legal or brand, and suddenly it becomes quite large in terms of the number of people involved. So you definitely need those type of kind of planning platforms to help you navigate through some quite complex interactions or campaigns, for sure.
So, Dennis, I don't know if you have more questions, but I have one last one. Yeah, I always ask this to everyone that comes to the podcast. And so what's next in life? What do you want to be remembered for?
What do I want to be remembered
for? Another tough one.
If you'd have asked me probably 5 years ago, I'd have said remembered for being a brilliant marketer and providing brilliant experiences to customers and prospects, and showing that we really care. I care, the organization cares. That's slightly changed. And I think now I want to pass on my experience and my knowledge and make people who are who want to go into marketing, passionate about marketing, make them a better marketer.
Okay.
That's what I want to
That's
do.
Amazing.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
It is amazing.
I feel like I will contact you at some point soon, Andy.
But it's important because I think that the textbooks, I think the academics, I think that, yes, it's very easy to talk to people in terms of this is what you should do, but the realities are very different, very different. And if I can help someone, then that would make me happy.
And also, I think it's much better to get help from somebody who's been like you, 20 years in this field and seen everything from no technology to better technology. Whereas all these, gurus who are online that tell you, buy my classes, buy my courses.
That's right. I'll teach
you to make this, to make that. So, that's a good one.
Well, so thanks
Thank
for coming
Andy.
To the podcast.
Thank
you. Pleasure. Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me. Really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Oh, well, that's all for today. Thanks for listening. And, I really hope you enjoyed it, this interview with Andy Letting. I've known him for a while, and he's a great person, a great marketer, and he knows what he's talking about. So, and if you want to listen to a snippet of the next episode, here you go.
Well, I guess the first two to three years of the company, we're still figuring a lot of stuff out, and most of it was just mostly myself doing all that stuff. Last year in 2020, when I was at Berkeley, I met this really kick-ass dude. He was a business student at the high school. He was just graduating from the high school of business, completing his MBA, and he just worked with me for a couple of months and on a side project. But then as he was graduating, he kind of just asked me like, hey, do you have like a full-time position available? And one of our advisors at Berkeley kind of said like, if you think this guy is like super smart, just why don't you just make him like an offer to be a co-founder? And I did. And he ended up rejecting like a sponsorship from McKinsey to pay for his MBA and like a full-time job offer from McKinsey like to take this massive leap of faith in joining the company. And it's just been an absolutely wild ride since he's been on. Like, it's like we just complement each other so well, and like we have like a solid business team, a solid tech team, and like we have just like a lot more structure in the company. It's starting to look like a real company now, as opposed to like just doing stuff on a daily basis.
Well, that was it. That was a snippet of it. And yeah, so before you go, please, please, please subscribe to Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you listen to this on or watching it. And yeah, see you next time. Bye-bye.